live from the WGY studios every Sunday. This is the Paul Potrat Show.
Stop spraying and praying. You're wasting money.
Millennials aren't lazy. It's how you lead them.
When you sell by price, you die by price.
The Paul Potrat Show, helping your business grow and stay relevant.
Covering the latest technology for business, leadership trends, and changing your mindset on marketing.
Now, your hosts, Paul Potratz, the business architect, and Samantha Zewalinski, the millennial entrepreneur.
So good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Sam.
How are you today?
Peachy. I've been saying that. I gotta stop saying that.
Peachy.
Did
you watch some like films with some Southern Belles?
I live with the Southern Belle, so you know, yeah, so there you go.
All right, well, let's jump into it.
Okay.
Do you know what we're talking about today?
Is it going to be real life or fake life?
Maybe a little bit of both, depending on what you think.
Okay.
But we're going to talk about the news, right? So there's like so much fake news, which depends on if you think it's real life or fake life.
Right, right.
So our topics are going to cover is watching the news good or bad?
Okay.
As well as the effects that fake news has on your business and consumer behavior.
What about the effects of real news?
That as well.
Okay. Just making sure.
All news. We're not biased.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty biased when we start talking about news. I think what we're going to talk about is going to shock some people.
Okay. So tell me, why is it going to shock me? Good or bad? Watch the news. What do you
do? Do not watch the news. Don't waste your time. Do not waste your time watching the news. And I know you disagree with that since you're a news junkie. Most of the people that I know are news junkies, and I just say, stay away from the news. I remember it was years ago that I would watch the news, and I could feel my blood pressure going up. I could feel my I was starting to sweat. I was grouchy all the time after I would watch the news. Well, not after. I was grouchy all the time.
Watching it after you watched it, the next day after you watched it.
Well, I became very cynical. I became very bitter, very angry. I don't understand why the news has to report on it's always everything's always bad. I mean, there's never any good news. I mean, when you watch the news, and I guess it's because if it's good news, it doesn't get ratings. I don't know. And honestly, you know, I would watch the news if the news really reported the way it was supposed to report, but they don't. They're a bunch of liars. Let's be honest. They just lie to get the ratings.
So define that for me. What do you mean if they reported the way they're supposed to report?
So years ago, I can't think of the guy's names. I think maybe like Chuck Wallace or, you know, these guys back in the day that are really old now or dead by now.
Okay.
That they were true gentlemen in their craft, and they took it very seriously. And when they would report the news, they would report the news not the way they felt. They were very neutral in reporting the news. So the individual that was consuming the news could form an opinion either way. Now, I mean, what you have is the news organization is always trying to do a spin. A case in point. So just recently, well, I went to Miami right after the hurricane came through, and you did too, and you tell me. But watching the news, national news, local news, or whatever, here in New York, you would think that Miami was pretty much a flood zone, that it was a completely almost washed away. I mean, granted, now we talk about Key West or Puerto Rico or something like that. Yes, it was really bad. But when they talked about Miami, I mean, I was on pins and needles, worried about, you know, our clients.
Well, you made alternate reservations even to stay at one of our clients' houses because you didn't know if there was anywhere else.
Right.
Well, and that's because I think, so like in this specific situation, you know, think about what you guys saw on the news, right? So I was watching the Weather Channel. We'd been right to the heart of Miami before. I took a picture to show our team, and I said, hey, we've stayed at this hotel before, and the anchor was up to waist deep in water. So we were going there thinking, we'll be swimming with the fish in the middle of Miami, in the center of the city.
Right. And so come to find out, what the news did is they went to one part of Brickell Ave in downtown Miami where it floods. If they get a rainstorm for 10, 15 minutes, it floods right there. And what I mean, not necessarily floods, but the drain system backs up this sewer or whatever. water rises right there. And that's where they were shooting the news from to create this, I guess you can say, sensational, mm-hmm. you know, news to get ratings and get people all up in arms and nervous and, you know, thinking that's where I'm going for the real news. And when it basically, it was an out and out lie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, why am I going to waste my time watching the news when it's really, it's a spin. It's a spin to what they want me to believe. It's a spin to be able to get ratings so they can sell more advertising at higher rates. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's all it is. It's about greed is what it really is. So I'm not going to waste my time to watch the news.
So if you're not going to watch the news, what are you going to do? Or are you not? And this is a personal decision. So right. I guess let's, you know, yeah. clarify it that way. To stay on top of things, to know what's happening not only in the country, but the world and in the world we live in. Or do you think that it's going to happen? It's going to happen. What's your stance on that?
Well, there's a lot of different things. So I'm going to get a lot of my news. Are you ready?
Can I guess?
Yes.
On social media.
Exactly.
You know there's fake news there too, right?
There's definitely fake news there. But it, you know, what I get irritated, my attention span is really short.
Mm-hmm.
And they report on something and they keep on and on and on. And they just keep on reporting on it over and over and over. And they keep on adding to it. And that's all they talk about. I mean, you know, just talking about like the whole national anthem and the kneeling and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, people, get over it. Quit giving these people all of this attention. If you would quit giving them all this attention where they're acting mm-hmm. like children and just like, whatever.
Let me guess how you feel about that.
Yeah, no kidding. Guess how I feel about that. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many more things in the world that are important. Things that, you know, why don't we talk about the veterans? Why don't we talk about the VA hospital that's crumbling, that's going bankrupt? Mm-hmm. Instead, we've got these, you know, basically these idiots, these uneducated idiots that are going to kneel and, you know, fight the national anthem when we have a VA hospital that's crumbling mm-hmm. and we have veterans committing suicide.
So on that, so the whole...
Don't get me all fired up.
Well, you said it. So, I mean, yeah. Everybody that's listening has an opinion. So I'm going to ask you a question on that. So their argument to it, right, is that they have a First Amendment right to do whatever they want, to abstain from standing. What's your feedback on that?
It's really simple. Then get out of the country. Go away. And that's the way I feel. I mean, the country was built. I mean, if that's the case, then where's my amendment right, too? Or what about all the veterans? Where's their amendment right to not have to go and sacrifice their life? And I think that's the problem with society, that we just, like, you know, turn a cheek, more or less, on things that are core principles.
And so overall, that's your problem with the news, is that it's not focusing on those avenues you find to be core principles or really important things that we need to be looking at, whether stateside or internationally. And it's maybe fake news. Part of that's a problem. We're going to talk about what that means in a minute. But just in general, if the news is good or bad for you, it actually affects you emotionally too, right?
Oh, yeah. So, well, it affects everybody emotionally. And I mean, you think about it. So, you know, you have this news out there where they want to try, where they're going for the ratings, and they're making it very, you know, sensational. That in, the, I guess it's the right word, but and it's not really fact.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can start talking about, oh, the stock market's in trouble. You know, banks are really doing this. So you start issuing that, and I mean, what happens is society gets scared. I mean, individuals get scared. I mean, we see it every election year. You know,
mm-hmm.
that our clients, that their business really starts to slow down every time we have a presidential
election.
Especially
this year, past year, there was a lot of lack of purchase due to lack of what was going to take place in our country
and
through
exactly.
the election.
And I mean, you think about it. So we get a new president. How does that affect you? It doesn't, unless you work high up in the government and you're going to lose your position in the government because a change of administration.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't affect you, but the sky's falling. The sky's falling. I'm gonna sit back and see what happens.
Well, and I think part of your statement means that the immediacy of the effect of it doesn't happen. So the election takes place, and it doesn't mean that tomorrow whatever change is going to take place is going to affect you. I mean, like, you watch the news and see all of the things that one president tries to undo from another president. Mm-hmm. You can take my opinion on your comment there by saying, watch the news, right?
Yeah.
But you can see all of those things. So there are long-term effects that take place by presidential change. However, that immediacy of those changes does affect consumer behavior, although you're not going to feel it for a few months or potentially a year down the line, or maybe even never. And now I hear some of the points that you're making.
Well, let me add one more point to it, too. Okay. So talking about the storms, the hurricanes. So right now, if you were to, because you watch the news, how much on the news are you seeing about Puerto Rico versus these overpaid children that are refusing the national anthem?
I would say that the football controversy, shall you call it that, definitely captures a lot more attention and a lot more feedback. So I think part of it too is your attention and your effort gets put into what is projected onto you. So the news projects onto us, it projects onto us, we should have an opinion about these football players. And so really it should project onto us that we have a feeling to do something for Puerto Rico. But chances are, and think about your own personal behavior, right? You have a feedback had feedback on the football players. You know, if you're listening right now, do you feel like you've talked to somebody over the last week about your opinion on the football controversy or about your need to help in Puerto Rico and the immediacy of those people? You know, there are brothers and sisters. You know, are we doing something or are you just putting your opinion out there? Like, what's being projected onto you more? And I think Facebook, though, is one of the biggest areas that that has happened. Like, honestly, Facebook, I get some news from there. I haven't seen anything about Puerto Rico. Every other person's posting their opinion about the football situation. So I think that it can be skewed too. I mean, you definitely have to look at what you're subscribing to. However,
well, I think the news also helps drive that though too, because the news is reporting on it. Football, football, football.
Correct.
I mean, come on, stop. And when we've got people that are in, you know, Key West, we have people that are in Puerto Rico, people that have died and people that are homeless now. And we're more worried about mega rich millionaires that refuse the national anthem. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's just silly. And I mean, and back to my point though, about the storm where they reported on the storm on Brickell Ave in Miami, that's fake news. That was all in all fake news is what it really was. So our, you know, our news affiliates that are supposed to be so trusted are reporting fake news. And I mean, it's kind of a play on the words. I mean, okay, they had a storm, but they overdid it. They overemphasized of how much damage was there. So,
well, and I think sometimes that is what fake news is, right? So there can be a level of truth, because most of the time there is a level of truth behind something. It's just, you mentioned earlier, they're kind of shifting it to work for their perspective or their positioning. So in that situation, you know, they're shifting it to work in their positioning of like, oh my goodness, look how, you know, bad the middle of Miami, Brickell Ave was devastated. They're not giving you the context of the fact that, yes, they did, those businesses on that street did suffer consequences, but two blocks over where, you know, a week later I was staying, there were zero notices except for all of the downed trees that there had been a bad storm there. But the context was this business floods no matter what. So the context was lacking. And then therefore it was used to project the level of the storm. But also think about it this way too. Like, we know Key West was affected, but they keep showing footage of Miami. Miami isn't the area you need to send help to and support. So in your, you know, your comment there, it's not projecting the correct need.
Yeah, exactly. They're not telling the truth. And that's my problem with news. And I mean, every time, I mean, you know, the different news organizations will side with, when we're going into a presidential election, they will pick their candidate that they want to promote, the candidate that they want to win, because it's greed. And if you watch the one of the news organizations, then you're going to see, who do they support? You watch the other one, who do they support? So you kind of think about what happens. So American people are being forced to decide which way they want to go. And that's not what news should be. News should report on the stuff and they should be very neutral about it. So someone can do the research. I mean, heck, we have the internet now. Do the research. And, but of course you got fake news, but do the research and decide who you want to support. A news organization should not be supporting a political candidate. It's as simple as that. And they pick sides, and that's not what it's about.
So I'm going to just go ahead, though, and say that I do disagree with your stance on a few things.
Okay.
So I agree with you on the whole don't pick a side, you know, portraying your perception of the news or that supports your readership, viewership, wherever your news source may be. And there's actually a study that was done that talks about whether your, you know, news advertising outlet sides with the right or the left, and then who your demographic is, and then kind of catering towards that. There was even something in the New York Times that showed that there was a publication that had varying degrees of content based on where it was located. But my point of where I really disagree with you is I think that you can't choose not to subject yourself to the news on whatever platform you want. So I know you're saying that you're getting it on Facebook, but I think you have to be especially cautious of what source you're getting that news from as well, because there are tons of people claiming to be a news source, a reliable insider. I think that's kind of a, you know, word that has positive and negative connotations to it, depending on where it's utilized. But I think that people, there is a percentage of our population that chooses just not to audit the news because it does emotionally impact them. And that's fine. But I think going through your life being oblivious of what's going on is ignorant.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though. Going through your life and listening to fake news is ridiculous, because you don't really know the truth. You don't know the facts of what's going on. And I mean, like the whole thing about North Korea, there's enough news outlets that will deliver the news in an RSS feed that you can know what's going on. So I'm not saying you go through life being ignorant and not knowing what's going on.
Yep.
I'm saying don't be the type that the first thing you do when you get up in the morning is you turn on Fox or you turn on CNN or whatever it is, and you just let that garbage run into your mind that messes you up for the rest of the day, the rest of the week. It messes up your entire life is what it does, because then you start to, and a lot of people focus on that. And it also affects, I mean, our population, the baby boomers, that as it gets, they get older, they get much more sensitive and they start watching that stuff. And then they go around wringing their hands, nervous that the sky's falling because of these news organizations. So you don't have to be oblivious, but you also shouldn't consume the way that they're trying to get you to consume it.
Well, and I think that goes back to anything, right? So no matter what you're doing in life, it's your job to understand it, absorb it, legitimize it, you know, do discovery on your own. And I think that's where a lot of people don't spend the time. So like, you mentioned, you know, the whole North Korea thing. So a lot of people don't realize that right now capabilities would only impact the West Coast of the United States. So having a conversation about the repercussions of a possible like nuclear attack at the moment would only impact the Western United States. If that's changed since the time I've done my homework, I apologize. Right. But the point is, you know, we can be reactive, but if somebody's, you know, walking around New York City thinking that we're going to suffer those repercussions tomorrow, the legitimacy of that claim is incorrect.
So that's my point exactly. So that affects consumer behavior. And you think about that. People are hearing that and start to panic. But what can we do about it? But again, I mean, how does that affect business?
Well, in a lot of situations, it affects, depending on what your products are, your services are, consumers deciding to purchase now versus waiting to see what happens in some situations. Especially, we saw that ever prevalent in the election, like we referenced earlier. So a lot of people were waiting to make very large purchases because they felt like that cash purchase or that utilization of funds would negatively impact them depending on who became president, based on their opinions of what each of those individuals would do.
Right. And then there's news too that will drive sales. You think about it. We just recently where we were talking about the hurricanes, that how many people ran out and started buying water and generators and batteries and flashlights and on and on. But
and I think that's what you can do, right? So you can utilize every piece of news or every piece of information, either as a business or you absorb as a consumer, to inform decisions and choices that you make. But you have to understand how they impact your business. And so if you are a big box store or small store in a storm central location. So if you're in the Florida, you know hurricane season is coming. Georgia, you know hurricane season is coming. So what can you do to capitalize on that to positively affect your sales? And then how can you help your community in those situations? Like, there's lots of great news out there that happened out of the storm as well. So for some of our clients, for example, it was a great opportunity after the storm to support their community and help them get back on their feet by serving them with the products and services that they offer. And then also for some businesses, it was a great source for them to be the center of the news. There's a great story about a local restaurant that housed 1,000 individuals during the storm, and they had tons of food. They went and spent their own money on it. And he felt like because his community supported him for so long, it was his duty to support them. Now, tell me that isn't the best PR you could ever have for your company.
But see, that's my point right there. So that would be good news. And what news organizations really reported on that? Who really talked about that?
I wouldn't be able to tell you where I saw it, but probably that was probably a good example of something I saw on Facebook.
Yeah. So why not some feel good news? But let's talk about fake news for a minute.
Okay.
So why fake news? Why are people
being fake? Because I can make money.
So there you go. So,
it's such a lucrative business. And yes. That's part of the problem.
Yeah. So that's where I'm talking about the greed, the news organizations and all the greed, greed to get ratings. I mean, it's like they have to, I have to outdo this one. So let me, you know, do some, you know, crazy outlandish story that's not really accurate.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can earn like $10,000 a month easy on a fake news website. And it could cost us $50 to put up a fake news website because you're paying for people to look at different ads, different articles. I got probably a couple months ago now, I have a younger sister. She's about 21. She'll probably kill me for telling you this, but I won't give her name. Everybody else knows her. And she sent me an email. Everybody loves Chip and Joanna Gaines, right? So if you like Fixer Upper and subscribe to all that kind of stuff. And she sent me an article about how she was quitting the show and starting a skincare line. And this has become a huge rumor that she's had to clarify publicly. But she sent me the article and she actually sent it to my mother and I, and we both wrote back, "This is fake." And she was like, "Oh, I didn't know that." So honestly, like, discovering and identifying fake news should probably be a course that we give when you sign up for like a Facebook account.
Right. Well, you know, in talking about fake news, but then the news organizations are doing the same thing that are, I mean, not necessarily doing the same thing, but they probably are, but they're falling for the same thing. That there's been different news organizations that would report news and then have to come out and go, "Oh, no, that's not correct. It's not true."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you think about it. I mean, like with the hurricanes, there is a report that there was over 50,000 people that were turning their household fans towards the hurricane to be able to try to blow the hurricane away. I mean, seriously, do we really think people really did that? And then what about the people that they said, "Stop firing your guns," that people were shooting their guns in Florida towards the hurricane?
Well, was that true? Because I think you told me that one and I repeated it. So I'm going to blame you if that was fake news.
I don't know if it was fake news. It was on
Yahoo
News. You know what,
though? Somebody's got to have done it, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they probably read it on the news and said, "Oh, well, maybe I need to do it too."
So, hurricane best practices, and somebody made $10 out of that click.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's just, it's ridiculous. And then, you know, you see the different actors and actresses where they report, "Oh, so-and-so died," and mm-hmm. it's, and come to find out it's so.
Well, so at the end of the day, it comes down to a couple of things, right? So yep. Our takeaways from this conversation really are that if you're, no matter how you're going to consume your news, you have to find a way to validate it and do your research yourself, whether it's in this situation you cited earlier of a political election season and identifying your candidate, or just identifying if an article you read about the Gaineses is actually legitimate. But there's a couple other things probably as a business that we could recommend they take into account or think about on how they can capitalize on news stories. What are some of those examples?
Well, I would say this: don't let the news consume you. Instead, you consume the news, if that makes sense. Making mm-hmm. sure that your news source is to the point and accurate, which is hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a business owner, you know what your seasons are. I mean, like if you're in the Northeast, prepare as a business owner, be ready to go when we get the blizzard that comes this winter. Whether we get it or not, we don't know, but be prepared for it, if that makes sense, what I'm really saying.
Think about those opportunities that you can capitalize on that feeds your business based on your geographic location or things that are happening in the world, because there's always ways we can capitalize on business momentum from a specific situation.
Right.
And I would say definitely if you guys have questions about how you can do that for your business, because those are things we get hit with all of the time in our day-to-day operation at Potrats. We're a consulting and advertising agency located in Schenectady. So these are conversations you've had because people have said, hey, I want to do a donation to the Hurricane Relief Fund. Should I put that denomination out there? Should I not? And very many times you have to think through those things because if you do it wrong, it comes back and bites you in the butt.
Yeah. I mean, well, we've seen that on Facebook, a numerous post where business owners wanted to try to help with the hurricane or whatever, a sales opportunity maybe. And socially, they got attacked.
So be careful about it. Consult your inner circle or us over at Potrats. But we're going to take a quick break for the news and we'll be back to hop into the business breakdown.
It's time for the Business Breakdown, the 7-minute on-air consultation for you. Call now for your free business consultation with Paul and Samantha, 1-855-POTRATS. That's 1-855-768-7289. Now, let's break it down.
So welcome to this week's section of the Business Breakdown. We have three great questions from our email and Paul Potrats Facebook questions. And Paul, I hid a couple of these from you because actually one of them I think we may have a difference of opinions on, and I'm really excited to see if that's true.
Oh boy, here we go.
So the first question is from Michaela, and she asks, do I invest in a great camera for my store? It's a fashion business, or do I do a website first? I can't afford currently to do both, but I need to get the ball rolling because I've already started to make my investment.
So great camera versus a website. So what I would say is, why do you need a great camera? Just make sure you have a decent phone. Because the cameras on the phones are so great, and that's what I would go with first, because you could create a lot more awareness using Instagram, using Facebook, using Twitter, using social media websites than you could with creating a website. So that would be my thought process on that. Granted, I would put together a quick little landing page, you know, for someone to land and capture their email addresses and have your contact information, but that's the direction I would go.
Okay, so we're cut from the same cloth because my answer probably would have been 95% the same.
Okay, what's the 5%?
I would have probably said you have to look at it like if she's talking about like a flip phone or the iPhone 4. Maybe you need a new upgrade.
Surely not. I mean, that's spend the money on the get a Samsung.
But so from a principal standpoint behind this question, and I'm going to pretend like I didn't hear that plug.
Yep. Okay.
I'm an iPhone user over here, but my point behind that would be, I think it's a principal question, right? So she's kind of asking like, what does she do first? And so I think it's kind of what do you do at the same time, but like, how do you still invest your money to get the best ROI? And you made the point of saying there's so much you can do on Instagram that's going to be able to feed your business that you don't even necessarily need a website for, because you can do things through little plugins that will allow customers to buy products with just a landing page. So you may be able to invest in that camera should you need it, but be able to start your business without having to have that fully robust website.
Well, I
website.
Want to change my story now.
Okay.
Don't waste your time on the website landing page at all. You've seen it. The feature on Facebook where you can sell products off of Facebook.
Correct.
I forget what that's called, though, that section.
Well, like the garage sale, things like that, the product categories as well.
Well, yeah, there's the garage sale, but now off of your Facebook business page, not your personal profile, but your business page, you can sell products off of your business page. I've seen that. Now, actually, I was on our Facebook page and seeing that we could list products for sale on our business page.
You can actually pick that type of business when you select your business page. So there's now the opportunity to determine your business type and then the featured plugins you want to add. So when you go to your page manager, if you've had a Facebook business profile for a long time, you can definitely make some upgrades to it. So that would be a recommendation if you haven't nurtured that a little bit more. But I think social media is going to be a really easy way to create revenue that you can then reinvest in your business that doesn't have to be product. That would allow you to say, hey, I'm going to put that website on the back burner, because think about the blood, sweat, and tears that that website may take you to get out there compared to just getting some photos that you would need for the website, but you also need to put on social media
I say video. I prefer video.
And I think you need a mix of both depending on what you're doing with it. So if you're styling photos and taking them between cool backgrounds and then promoting an outfit to purchase, that may be a situation where you want to show a photo versus like you're showing a specific pair of shoes. You want to see all angles of just those shoes. So it's really depending on the type of business that you're falling in line with.
Yeah. But then I would want to see a video of somebody putting that outfit together too. So there you go.
So that could be your Instagram story.
Exactly.
Or your Facebook story.
So there you go. We agreed on that one. We don't agree on news, but we agreed on that.
The important things in life we agree on. All right. So our next question is from Frank. And he said, what is a marketing funnel and do I need it? So that's a really broad, great question.
So here's a question, though. Sam, are you seeing it on your Facebook feed that everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people are talking about a funnel that here, download this funnel, receive this funnel, watch this webinar, learn how to do a funnel. You need a funnel, this $100,000 funnel. I mean, I'm just naming things that I'm seeing in my Facebook feed. Have you seen that too?
Yeah. And even more than that, like funnel by ad type or by provider, it's like funnel madness.
Yeah, I know. Everybody.
That's, it's kind of confusing. And like, I can see where Frank is asking this question because I saw a download the other day for a phone funnel, which is actually how you can utilize the funnel to drive phone calls based on where somebody is in the buying process. But that's like super confusing. I had to read the description.
Right.
And we do this for a living because it was unclear that what they were trying to communicate. So example of a bad landing page. And then, you know, a funnel about email. So like what funnel do I need is probably part of Frank's question as well.
Right, exactly. So I mean, funnels, and you think about it, and everybody's talking funnel, which is a buzzword right now to really kind of understand that. Years ago, we would have a product or a service that we'd want to sell. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it was a product, for example, that we were selling chia pets. So we would run an ad about a chia pet, and you could buy one chia pet for $19.95, or you could buy two chia pets for $29.95.
You still love those commercials?
Yeah. Chia pet. So exactly. So what's happened now is instead of just trying to sell somebody right from the beginning, mm-hmm. you create a funnel to engage them. In other words, you're bringing them down a funnel, different levels of the funnel. And am I making sense so far?
Yep. So you're not just starting the conversation at the purchase point where Tia was saying for $29.95, you could have two of these in your house with shipping and handling. You're starting that conversation even earlier before they know they want the Tia.
Right. Because some people could just automatically say, I don't want a Tia pet. That's silly. Mm-hmm. So you would start the conversation more or less you would understand who is the target market and how would they use that Tia pet? What would be interesting? So you could... case in point, you could talk about, 10 amazing decorating tips for under $30. Mm-hmm. So you would put that out there. You would bring them in wanting the amazing decorating tips or knickknack tips or whatever it is, and you would bring them down the funnel. So now you've established yourself as an authority and you give them free information that would engage them other than just trying to hit them between the eyes and saying, buy this today. So that's what a funnel is. And there's different funnels. So depending on what you want to sell. Does that make sense? You want to add to that?
Yeah. So I think like something to think about that is, and we can name a couple of the different stages of the funnel. So a lot of the times it starts with an awareness, right? So awareness that there's either a product or a service out there and then kind of consideration. So there's that reflection of maybe I need it, maybe I don't, making that determination. So then from that comes preference. Like, do I buy company A, company B? Do I want blue? Do I want red? Then somebody has to take action. They have to do something. They have to submit a lead. They have to purchase something. And then that funnel, I think one thing too, Frank, to your question, it also helps you get another sale. So a funnel doesn't end at purchase. It's almost, there's usually about two steps after purchase and it goes to loyalty and advocacy. So where we talk about creating reviews, writing reviews, having people be the voice of your product, share your product, and then repurchase, that's where all of that comes in. So we've talked about those in different capacities in the past, but you have to start at the top of the funnel in your marketing strategy. You can't just start at the sale point. That sale has to be smooth and easy to take place because then otherwise if the transaction is too difficult, you'll lose them. But a couple examples. So I think a couple examples of how you start at awareness would be really important maybe to show Frank and our other listeners how to get somebody to find awareness and then consider their product and then within their product line create a preference. So
think about it as a lead magnet though too, because this allows you to create a tremendous database of people that would possibly be interested in your product or service.
Exactly. So things that fall into that category is, you said, like articles or videos, things on Pinterest, things on social media. A number of different examples fall into those categories.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's just, it's an easy way to engage people with their interests, their hobbies. It's just, it's easier to get out there, find out who you need to target and target those individuals other than just trying to sell them a product that they automatically tune out.
And so it sounds like a lot of work, but really what it does is it allows you to proposition your product in a way you're not always talking about price. So when it comes to price, you've already created that desire for the product that it becomes a lot easier for the consumer to say, okay, because now they've said, okay, I have considered it. I've decided what my preference is. I've identified that I need it. And that's really just justification. I've justified to myself that it's important that I have whatever it is or have whatever service it is, that now that purchase, that cost can be $5 more than your competitor because you've established the value compared to them.
So let me give you an example really quick of a funnel, okay, that got sucked me in and I just can't seem to get out of it, which is a bad thing and kind of a good thing. So I was searching for ways to get swirl marks out of your paint, like on your car.
Okay.
And so I found an article. It was a video that said, here it is. This is how we're going to tell you how to do it. And so I watched the video and then they said, well, go ahead and sign up for this document. We're going to tell you of all the chemicals that you need and the pad, all the stuff you need to do it. I signed up for this little guide to be able to do it. So I expressed interest, but it wasn't to any specific company that sold the chemicals. At least I didn't think.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they received my contact information. And I did get the information, but now I continually get emails from this company called like Detailers Domain or whatever. And they're always selling products, always things on sale, always giving me tips and ideas. And so I'm like, oh, okay, I got to do that to my car,
mm-hmm.
which I end up buying more products. So it's a funnel. So it gives them an opportunity to engage me, upsell me, cross sell me, and continue the conversation with giving me stuff other than screaming, buy this. So hopefully that explains a funnel, and a funnel can be done for any industry, whether you're an attorney, an accountant, it does not make a difference. It works for everybody.
And so that was a great question, Frank. Thank you so much for reaching out to us via email. And that's a great example of if you don't want to be featured live on air, like a lot of our individuals who have written in recently to the Business Breakdown, you can take this conversation offline with Paul or myself, or just write in and let us know what your question is. And we'll answer it either live on air, or we'll take it up over the phone with you one-on-one. So don't forget, reach out to us at paulpochatz.com on the Paul Pochatz Facebook page, or you can give us a call at 855-POCHATZ. You know that number is 855-POTRATZ. And so we have one last final question in the Business Breakdown today, and that comes from Ryan. And Ryan is asking a really simple question, but I think it is one that can be tricky for some business owners and individuals that have a staff. And he's asking, should I let my customers have my cell phone number and text me? And should I let them do that for my staff? Or where should that boundary line take place?
Boy, that's like a slippery slope.
Well, it's a loaded question because there's a lot of factors that fall into it. So I think maybe what we can do is address this in a way we would if we were talking to Ryan on the phone. So there were a number of foundation questions we would need to ask to understand his type of business and type of clientele as well as his staff. Because the question that he's asking about it, his staff, maybe are there trust issues or additional issues that he may be concerned about. But so what are some of the questions we would ask to help establish whether or not this would be the right decision for Ryan and his business?
So I'd say the first question is, when you're talking about your staff, how long has your staff been with you?
Because
mm-hmm. That can be a consideration, because maybe you've got that individual that's hopping around. And then if you have a client or a customer that's texting them after they've already left, then you could lose that opportunity because that's the only level of engagement that they do have.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be the first question. The next question would be, what are you selling? What's the product or service are you selling? Do you really have loyalty from those individuals that they will stick around,
mm-hmm.
Stay around and purchase more and more from you? Is it a high, an expensive product or what?
And the other question there would be, for the type of business that you're in, is that a need to be able to text somebody, or is there another form of communication that could supply them the same response rate, same demand that they're making? And are you defaulting to text because you feel that that is what everybody's talking about? So in some situations, email from a company email can work just as well.
Yeah. Well, I would say, if it's all avoidable, to go through a texting service. Mm-hmm. So you have that established number that would never change. And then someone, you know, individuals could text that number, mm-hmm. and you could give, you know, each sales associate or business development person a number that could be texted to, but that number would stay with the company versus going with that person when they left.
That's one of the benefits of technology, right? So it used to be every salesperson had their black book of contacts and the dealer kind of didn't know who they were, hope they curated them in their CRM. Now you have all of those pieces of technology where it can be a mandate, like the texting platform. The other benefit of that would be, what's the one thing we're also concerned about, business owners? What is our team saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Are they saying what they should? Are they representing our product or service in the right way? Are they conducting business appropriately? Now, the answer to that last question would hopefully be yes if they work for you. But, you know, this is also a reason that if you move to a texting platform, you'll say, oh, maybe I need to train, you know, my team better on this upsell that we have. Maybe I'm seeing that that's where we're not capitalizing an opportunity, which also helps to drive training and business growth.
Well, you know, I've been asked that question a lot of times where they're saying, well, I don't want my team to do that. I don't want my social media. I don't mm-hmm. want them on social media. I'm afraid what they'll say. And I'm thinking, well,
why do they work for you?
Yeah, why do they work for you? Because they're also on the phone with your clients. They're also sending emails to your client. So if you have that concern, then they probably shouldn't be working for you. So what I would do with texting is, yes, I mean, I would prefer to text, wouldn't you, Sam? If you had a question?
I like to email.
Okay.
But texting for sure. I like anything that's immediate gratification. Like if I could text my doctor, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Think about those kinds of things, like instead of leaving a voicemail, you know.
Well, I kind of think about that. If I could text my dentist, that would be great. That
you'd never go, though. It'd be excuse after excuse.
I know. I have to call them back and reschedule. But anyway, so I say use a texting platform, make sure it's pumped into the CRM, and follow it that way versus, you know, being, I guess, the Lone Ranger and giving your mobile number out.
And then I think there is another question there too, though. So should we let people use their cell phones? Should Frank as a business owner Ryan share his info as a business owner? What do you think about that? So we answered the texting platform part, but what about a phone number?
I think as a business owner, yeah. I mean, depending on the company and who you're giving it to, I mean, I wouldn't give it to everyone. Depending what you sell.
You want to know a dirty little secret I have?
Okay, what?
And actually, with our new business cards, this probably isn't going to work.
Yes.
I used to have two versions of business cards.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
One with a mobile and
one would have my cell phone. So I would give that to clients or potential clients so we could always be connected. They could text me or call me. And then I would give one to vendors. So yep. I would meet a vendor and I'd say call. And then they call my office phone. I get virtual email or virtual voicemails. But then they didn't have my cell phone number and we're blowing that up. Yep. So that's kind of a little trick if you want to think about that.
Well, I used to do that too. And then what I did is I just put my mobile number on my card. So when the vendor calls me, I just tell them, hey, this is my mobile and, you know, please use the office number and I can't help you. So mm-hmm. I just told them the way it was and yeah. that was it. So,
well, I usually can help them. I just don't want to on my mobile.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So there you go.
But I mean, like, so maybe evaluate that. Like, is that one of the reasons or motives behind should I give it out?
Right.
But I think if you're in a service-based business, doing that provides an extra layer of value to your clients and shows that, you know, you really have that customer-centric game plan.
Right.
So think about that. I mean, if you're selling makeup, probably don't need to give your cell phone out. Don't really think Ryan's in the makeup business.
Yeah.
But if you're a Mary Kay consultant, maybe you want to. Maybe that you would get text messages or you would get calls from people wanting to book a party and you'd rather get it on your cell phone. So it's all about what kind of business you're in.
Well, talking about texting real quick, hopefully we have enough time on this. So texting, so I was looking at properties, like investment properties. This was a while back. And I filled out a lead form on a website about a specific property and it was around probably 12:30 at night when I did that. And then I received a text message like 10 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think as a salesperson? It was a real estate agent. Should that real estate agent have texted me at 12:30 at night when I just filled in a lead form about a property? What do you think?
Well, my first question would be, did you pick a preferred way to be contacted?
There was no such thing.
Okay.
You just put a phone number in there.
So You know, I'm kind of hesitant to answer that. I feel like the right answer would be it was his duty if he or she was awake to text you back or to get back to you right away, because then you can have that immediate conversation.
It was 12:30 at night.
But I would say no.
I filled in the lead form and then boom,
I would say probably don't text me. Send me an email. Hopefully I'm on my email, and then you can ask if you'd like me to text you. I'm around. Because chances are you probably don't want to have a conversation because your significant other is sleeping in bed next to you and you're like insomnia over there on your computer. But the cell phone may be a little intrusive at midnight.
Well, I was looking at the properties on my mobile phone. Mm-hmm. And so 10 minutes into it, text message comes back. And my feeling on that, and this would just go to show, I was like, wow, this is awesome.
But you know what, though? So actually, if your phone said from mobile device, I probably would change my answer. You know how like sometimes like my email when I send it from a phone, it says like sent from iPhone.
Yep.
So if I had that as part of my signature still, I would probably change my answer because then I know you're on a mobile, so you're less likely to see your email right away.
Yeah, but it was just a standard lead form and where you just put your phone number in is all it was. I don't know. There might have been something on the back end that she's seen it came on a mobile.
Oh, I gotcha.
But I really appreciated that. I was like, this is awesome. And then we go into this long text message back and forth about the property.
But you know what? I'd rather have to say sorry for doing that.
Exactly.
Than be, you know, ticked off in the corner that I still haven't heard back because you told this story a couple weeks ago on air and you said that, you know, that's one of the individuals that you continued the conversation with and were, you know, really pleased with the customer service you got. So I think, again, we all look for that immediate gratification. So, you know, I think you got to be careful in situations like that, but wouldn't you rather beg for forgiveness than ask for permission?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So
just do it. And the person will tell you if they don't want you to do
it. And then you can just say, sorry, I thought you'd like to hear back from me right away since you, you know, submitted a lead form.
Yeah. So a follow up to where I emailed all the different real estate agents. Guess how many I've heard back from now?
Three.
The number has not changed.
No.
So none. Just the one that I'm working with. That's it.
Wow. So. They must have heard you on the radio and thought you were too tough a critic to write back or something.
That's probably what it was.
Well, Ryan, thank you for your question for the business breakdown. We enjoy talking about whether or not we should give out our cell phone numbers or text messages and then a little quiz. I'm not sure if I passed or failed there, but some good insight on what you can do to influence your business decisions. So that's it for our portion of the business breakdown, but we're going to jump back into the topic we talked a little bit about earlier and just recap with some of the takeaways that you can adapt to your business when it comes to creating strategies based on events in the news, in the weather, so on and so forth. So we kind of talked and teased the whole, you've got to know whether it's good or bad for you to capitalize on, for example, a storm. So with that, is there a specific thing that somebody should think about prior to putting out their message about, and let's focus on donations. Mm-hmm. A lot of businesses, when they come to a disaster, say, I want to donate a portion of my proceeds to the sale of a product. Is there a line or a recommendation we can make to businesses on how to know if it's good or not to adapt that into their marketing message?
I think there is. And it's what I've seen is do not tie it to a sale. If you tie it to a sale and say, for every purchase that's made, we're going to donate $50, probably not the best way to go if it's something like with a storm where mm-hmm. there's people that's lost their homes, lost their lives. Yep. Instead, decide to be a pickup point or a drop-off point is what I mean. You know, let people come by and donate whatever it is that yep. are going to be the donations. Don't tie it to a purchase because I think people are very sensitive about that and saying, oh, well, you're trying to benefit from this. You're trying to make money from this. So if you want to donate money, then I say just go through, do your sales like you normally do your sales, mm-hmm. but don't tie it to a purchase. Try and advertise it. And then say after the fact, hey, we're donating X amount of money as the business. Don't tie it to your customers doing business with
you. Or do it more as a grassroots fundraiser, like a car wash where, you know, donations are taking place. And I think a lot of the times what happens is you say that you're giving away $50 in that example, but it's a really high dollar item. So that $50 on what is the perceived gross of that product and that perceived profit is like, that's all you're doing.
It's an insult. Yeah.
So it actually gives you that negative feedback that you weren't looking for. And actually part of it is if you feel really 100% committed to saying that you're going to give away part of your proceeds, don't say what you're going to give.
Right.
Because people then form an opinion based on how much they think you're making on a product and how much you're donating. So you're better off just leaving it high level, we're going to donate some proceeds and leave it at that.
Right, exactly.
But think about a way you can do it more grassroots, get your community involved and involve them to donate. I think a great thing we've seen and worked with some businesses to establish is ways to then congratulate our community for helping to participate in the donations. Like, you know, you go to the grocery store and they ask you, hey, would you like to donate to childhood cancer in the month of September? And then your name goes on the wall. Creating things like that, so that way we're acknowledging everybody who helped to support, whether it's a local or national initiative.
I think that's well said and just simplifies it. I'm sure you've seen the backlash on Facebook of some different companies of what happened over the hurricane. It's like, wow. And their heart was probably in the right place, but it sure didn't come off that way when it went into graphics.
And if
someone
you're
out there.
Afraid, probably what you mean is market tested with those around you.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll leave you with the Paul Potrat Show from today. That's all we have time for, but we look forward to talking to you again next Sunday. And we look forward to hearing from you over the next week about your questions for our upcoming episode and the business breakdown. To reach out to us, you can contact us at paulpotrats.com, where you can see all of the resources and past episodes of the show, as well as head over to the Paul Potrats Facebook page and continue the conversation in the week ahead.
You've been listening to The Paul Potrat Show. Paul is the architect behind Potrat's Advertising, an international consulting and advertising agency based in Schenectady, New York. For more info or to learn how to work with Paul and the Potrat's team to grow your business and improve your processes, visit paulpotrats.com. That's Paul, POTRATZ.com. And join Paul and Samantha next Sunday morning at 11, right here on WGY.